Roger.
Welcome, everybody, to What's in Store, the show where we cover hot topics at the cross-section of retail and real estate. I'm Carly Iacono, and I'm joined by my co-host, Chris Ressa. Chris, great to see you. How's life today?
Life is good. Been on a traveling tear and back now, so been all over.
So you're actually in the office getting deals done now instead of just visiting friends, right? Because I know that's all you were doing. Just
right.
Gallivanting around.
I had one where I was in 6 airports in 3 days.
Okay, that's actually borderline miserable.
That was a
way
lot.
Too much. Was it productive?
Super productive.
Okay, so then it's worth it. Good. Well, welcome back. Glad to have you in the Northeast again, and glad the trips were productive.
I brought the rain.
All right. So then you could leave and come back again. Let's try that again if that's the case, because that is no good. And you are not wrong. It's been raining for like a week straight. So
I know.
Everybody not in New Jersey, New York, you can officially feel bad for us, but we're going to get through. Builds character. So they say. So today we're talking about something we really haven't touched on in a while, and that is kind of the state of the direct-to-consumer or DTC market. And it's funny because you don't really, I think as a consumer, you don't think, oh, this is a DTC brand or this is a conglomerate. You just think, I like this product. But the way brands come to be is really very interesting. And DTC is something that had, I would say, a pretty big moment right after the pandemic or during the pandemic. And it is now kind of shifting how that just part of retail looks and how brands are being funded and how they're coming to existence. So we wanted to take a moment and just give you our thoughts, our wonderful listeners who appreciate our kind of perception on where the DTC market is today and some of the challenges and benefits we think are ahead in the near future. So let's jump right in. We're going to start with the state of funding for direct-to-consumer products, because as we all know, funding is what makes the world go round, and there's been a few changes. So Chris, why don't you kick us off with your thoughts on DTC funding?
Yeah, I think it's really challenging now. I think the stat I saw is that at the end of last year, funding through the venture capital route or and any just type of funding was down 97% from 21 for any brand at the intersection of consumer products and e-commerce. So I think that just tells a story that there's a lot less institutional dollars chasing these types of investments anymore. When I say investments, I mean investing into these companies
That number, I believe, is from Crunchbase, and it was $5 billion in 2021 and $130 million in 23. So those are real numbers, right? That's a very significant shift.
Yeah, super significant shift. And I think one obviously is clear. It's just the cost of capital is a lot higher. So the companies willing to invest, number one, are looking for a return that was greater than before, that money for these startups is, you know, more costly. I think too, just based on the 2010 to now, the entire, you know, digital first or digital only businesses that raised all this money, and the path to profitability has been concerning for a lot of investors for some of these brands that just tried to gobble up market share. And the cost to scale is the cause of that. One of the causes of that, I think, has really put the pause button for some of the institutional investors, venture capital, that were investing in a lot of these businesses.
You also have a much less favorable IPO market. I think we had 4 or 5 big DTC IPOs at the end of last year. And I think all but one are trading significantly below their IPO price now. So when you get enough data points like that, I think it makes people wary is probably a soft way to say it, right? Quite fearful that maybe this isn't a good time to IPO. And if you're not taking that route, what's the exit look like? And how easy is that? And in a time when everyone's a little more risk adverse and capital is at a premium, that's a tricky path. So if not IPO, what is it? What does the exit look like?
Yeah, that's certainly. And I think another reason, you know, that there's some challenging this funding is majority of these DTC brands are very lifestyle-esque and discretionary spending for the consumer. And so I think, you know, as these big companies that make these investments have a lot of information and data at their fingertips, and they're looking at spending habits of people and, you know, potentially a slowdown in discretionary, it's concerning.
Right. And it's a difficult time to not only launch, but scale something when the consumer is pulling back. If your whole model is we need new consumers, we need new eyes, and we need a share of their wallet for something that's discretionary, like you mentioned. So I think that's the market timing stuff.
I think, you know, never count out the American consumer. It's amazing how resilient the American consumer is. I think they're shifting their spending to more, you know, needs-based and value decisions versus, you know, really discretionary items that's how I would think about it. But the long story short is if there's less discretionary, and a lot of the DTC brands are discretionary, I think it's gonna be hard for that. I think, you know, if you're in the boardroom, the startup and the founders need a really good position as it relates to that comment.
And I think it's an interesting distinction that discretionary spending is not stopping, but it's going to be difficult to lure new consumers, right? So if you have an X amount of budget and you know the kids need the Lululemon or the Apple products or the Stanley, whatever the hot items that are already kind of entrenched in consumers' lives, like it or not, that money I think would be spent there first instead of saying, you know, I'm awesome, I'm just going to go try this brand new product no one's heard of, right, with my free cash flow. So I think pulling consumers to a new brand as they're starting to pull back spending overall is even more difficult, even if they still have some money to spend.
Agreed. Are your kids on the Stanley kick?
Oh, forget about it. Of course. We don't know anyone that's not. They spill, they leak. It's insane.
Wow. It's fascinating, the Stanley kick to me. It's fascinating.
Yep.
I got to give this company's fascinating that they were able to penetrate all these demographics. Like when you were a kid, did you care like what type of bottle you drank out of? Like,
no, I didn't even have a water bottle. I think it was like you pass by a water fountain every once in a while and you're like, all right. Yeah. No, this
water
is
fountain. Like I was happy with the hose. Like,
right.
Water fountain.
This is amazing marketing. Right? Didn't they start? I think Stanley, and we're getting on a tangent here. Sorry, everyone. But I think Stanley started in like the construction industry, right? With thermoses and like really tough products. And here we are, you know, every middle schooler needs three different colors and little Stanley toppers. And I it's amazing. Great marketing, Stanley. Really great marketing. Anyway, so I think to our point, get back on track, it is hard to pull people away from brands they love if they're tightening the purse strings a little bit. So just an additional layer of challenge. And then if we have any concerns about profitability, the lenders who are more risk adverse, everyone from the banks to venture capital are going to be a little more hesitant, which is a challenge today.
Yep.
Let's move on to point two, which is this kind of shift in our thought on selling channel. So for years, I don't know, 5, 6, maybe even longer, maybe we're getting close to 10 years, we have had an obsession with discussing the right selling channel, right? Should this be bricks and mortar? Should it be online only? Should it be omni-channel? What is the right winning way to sell products? And I think that we're moving away from that into there's a lot of right answers, and it depends on the product, and maybe there's not just one right way. So tell me what you've seen in the shift in channel and what that means for DTC.
Yeah, that was a great summation of it. I think for years, we had this simple model, which is like you like had a product and you wanted to get out there and you went to these major retailers and you tried to pitch to get it on the shelves. They buy it from you and then they sell it because they're good at the retailing portion, which is very different than, you know, the part of the business that they were, that wholesale, you know, that product companies were good at. I think one is, you know, Procter & Gamble is like the biggest example I could give, which, you know, they have companies like Pampers that was like the first to cross $10 billion. I think Pampers would be a Fortune 500 company if it was a standalone. And last time I checked, I don't know, there aren't actually Pampers stores, right?
Right.
If I want Pampers, I go to Walmart. If I want, you know, Pampers, I go to Target. And that was a proven model. And then we have disruption. And the disruption was, you know, can we eliminate the middleman? And can we sell it just online to save costs? And I think what's happened is, you know, and Simeon Siegel from BMO says this all the time, is like the middleman is one, not as expensive as we thought, and two, is pretty efficient at doing this. And so it was, you know, it was this whole push to go and eliminate the middleman. And I think today, you know, there's some things that, like, if it's not broke, don't fix it, I think. And I think that DTC has a really a place and a strong place, right? There are some really successful DTC brands, but I think that doesn't mean we should eliminate the wholesale channel. And, you know, now a bunch of brands are talking about doing both, right? And there's something to be said, right? If you're this brand that has such cachet and people will drive to you and people will seek you out, and because you're the only place that has this product, okay, right? Nike's made a big shift to a portion of their business to be DTC. But you can still buy Nikes at Dick's Sporting Goods. It's a major partner of theirs. You can still buy Nikes at other places. And so I think this whole concept of, you know, we're going to eliminate the middleman has proven out to be really tough. And then you take the second piece, that if you eliminate that channel and you want to do it all yourself, you want to make the product, you want to eliminate the wholesaling pipe, and then you want to sell it. And then, by the way, you only want to do it digitally. That cost to scale is really expensive. The customer acquisition cost is really expensive. You know, why not leverage the brands of Target and Walmart who have spent all this money in marketing and leverage that to be on their shelves? And instead, you want to start from scratch. They spent billions in getting to where they are, and you want to start from scratch. I think it's really tough to get to scale. I think the part that's probably more achievable, sorry, is to be small. If you want to be small and do $1 million in revenue, and that's, I'm not poo-pooing that, it's great. You can do it in a way so scrappy, but you want to start to scale and get to $100 million. The cost to do that is significant.
And I think it really does depend on the product, right? Personally, I think it would be exhausting if we had to order every product from an individual retailer, go to an individual store for everything that we wanted, right? Your Pampers example is a great one, right? You don't want to have to make a whole nother separate order or stop just for that one item. So it really has to be a specialty item. And then you are cutting out all of the benefits of these other partners. And to your point, the middleman is a great way to distribute at scale for an efficient cost. And we've seen a few other expressions of this, which is, it's not really wholesaling, but more brand partnerships. So even if you're not doing a traditional Pampers to Walmart model, I think we're seeing more of the brand partnerships to take advantage of the physical locations and I guess digital as well, and scale that the established retailers have, like Glossier and Sephora, Madison Reed. I think they're in Walmart, right? Yes. So those are another way that the channels are kind of blending, and we're really realizing there's not just one right way. There's potentially a place for both, and the savings of doing it all yourself are not necessarily there.
Yep.
I think is the end story there.
For sure.
Now, the third thing that we're going to touch on, and just kind of a shift in perception here, is that the model was going back to the do-it-all-yourself, create this product that you think is wonderful, get funding, throw up an e-commerce website, and they will come. As we've seen with a lot of companies, that is not necessarily the case. So I think now the thought process is shifting in the reverse, that maybe all along the better method was physical first, physical stores first, and then you add the e-commerce, then you become omni-channel as you grow and you already have an established presence. Because we've talked on and on about how productive and efficient physical retail is as compared to e-commerce in terms of customer acquisition costs, advertising, all these things. So maybe the model should be what it started out so long ago, which is physical retail first, and then you scale into e-commerce. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think it's a great point. I would say, like, if I opened up a physical store today and I only had one, I'd probably still have a website, right? And I'd try to figure out how to be able to sell through that. However, there was this concept of you do e-commerce, you get to a size, then we start opening stores. But I would take some of the brands that we don't put in DTC, but they're largely, and I don't know if they don't want to be labeled into this, but, and maybe that's why, but we don't talk about Lulu and Bath and Body Works as DTC, and some of the brands like American Eagle, and some of these stores that started as physical stores, then they, because of online retailing growth, they ended up wanting to meet their consumers. So they opened up websites. But if we look at some of the success of some of these, you know, brands of scale, where some of these DTC startups would like to get to, they were either in stores as wholesale, or they were DTCing their product through physical well before they ever DTC'd their product online. And that wasn't the new, that wasn't, you know, they might not have had a choice, but nonetheless, because, you know, e-commerce wasn't around when Bath & Body, you know, or wasn't prevalent when Bath & Body and, you know, Lulu and these companies started, but it worked. They're still, you know, at scale today.
So the old concept is now becoming new again, because it's been proven.
History repeats itself. I think we're going to see, you know, the e-commerce thing is fast, right? That's the thing. E-commerce is fast, and people were loving this go fast. It's just speed cost a lot of money. And maybe we're about to see someone creates a new product and we're going to go back to how it was done. And let me open up a store to sell that. Let me see if I can get into Target or Walmart or whomever, Neiman Marcus, whatever lane you're in. And then let me start open up some more of my stores and, you know, probably have a website at the same time. But I think you're going to have less of, let's open up just this website. Let's try to hit a home run online, and then we'll fill in the stores later. Because at the end of the day, some of the brands that are these DTC startups that like took off, there's millions and millions of online websites. And there's only a couple unicorns that we talk about. Maybe there's 20. So like everyone's chasing this like unicorn scenario that's really hard. Like how many times in the retail e-commerce space have we heard like some business is trying to be the Uber of?
Right.
There, it's hard.
There's so many. Yep.
It's hard to do that. Like to disrupt and be this new thing and do it the way they did. Whereas on the other side, you have all these, a much larger number of like proven winners where maybe you can't do it fast and getting the scale would be slower, but a little bit more proven.
And I think it's important to note, we're not saying that disruption is not possible. We're not saying new brands are not coming, because there are so many interesting concepts out there, and some of them will be DTC, right? And some of them will be wholesale, and some will be omnichannel, and you know, some will be store within a store and brand partnerships. There's a lot of tremendous innovation. A lot of money will be made. But I think the message is really this as the way to launch and the fast way to profitability as just sole DTC is not necessarily true. And there's more to the story, more channels, more ways to sell. And there are real challenges to being a standalone DTC brand trying to start from nothing. And I think that's what we really want to shed light on.
I think the food space is pretty interesting. Like restaurant business, we know is really hard, right? The failure rate in restaurants has been talked about for years and years and years. We went through this whole like ghost kitchen,
right?
You know, online phase, right? It's a word. When's the last time you like heard someone really like talking up a ghost kitchen? It's been a minute, right?
Years. Yeah.
It's been a minute, right?
We're so excited about that too, because it was a brand new idea. And then it just poof, it's just completely gone.
Like if you were opening a restaurant today, would you start with a physical location or would you start like online and ghost kitchening it?
It's such a great example. We'd definitely start with a physical location.
You know what I mean?
And probably a website too. To your point, but you would never start with, okay, I have a ghost kitchen. Do you want to order from here?
I think it's really hard to do that.
Mm-hmm. That is a great example.
Yeah.
Well, I think we wrapped it up. Those were very interesting thoughts on DTC, the state of that part of the retail market, and some of the changes we might see ahead in 2024. To everyone listening, that was What's in Store with Carly and Chris. We're so happy you tuned in, and we look forward to seeing you again next month. Have a great day, everyone. Thanks, Chris.
Thank you.